Well, so much for the moment of our geographic regionalism. Now to the highly mysterious esoteric subject of political clandestinism. Every society has secret social and political organizations. The Masons, the Ku Klux Klan, the Mafia, the Chinese Tongs of Chinatown, Greek societies, Knights of Columbus, all sorts of them. Some are good, some are bad. All are designed to serve some need of the members, some social or psychic need. Vietnam was and is probably the neat blue ultra in this respect, comparable perhaps only to Italy, early Italy under the Borgias, 15th century. In much of the world, this clandestinism and these clandestine organizations, especially third world, are the product of feelings of racial superiority and manifest destiny. When they're nourished in the setting of a foreign power occupation, they yield a collection of blood brotherhoods, militant national organizations, general purpose clandestine associations, or some combination of all of these. Such was the case of Vietnam. Many of the traditional village groups that we talked about last week were, if not clandestine, at least sub rosa, the result of native caution. Unless an organization had a reason to be public, for example, the channel of communication, it remained inconspicuous. But these groups were in no way channels of communication. The Nya, or the clan, had only nominal communication within the village. Village court channel was very weak, and clan court channel was virtually non-existent. Therefore, the less anyone knew about a group's existence and purpose, the better. Buddhist groups became covert or partially so from time to time after the 13th century as a result of sporadic official discrimination by the court in Hue, which was Confucian, and they had various nasty things they would do from time to time to the Buddhists. The protective associations we talked about last week, Cao Dai and Hua Ha, took on the shapings of a religious order and were headed often by religious figure. And that is their hierarchical, ritualistic, and doctrinaire, blending both political and religious beliefs. These clandestine organizations had small or great purpose, could simply be interested in the well-being of their members, or could seek the destruction of the existing governmental structure. In any case, the tradition of clandestinism was established, and the clandestine organization emerged, if that's the correct term, to dominate Vietnamese politics to this very day. The period of greatest refinement came under the French. Clandestine organization became the instrument for dealing with a foreign ruler, a tendency enhanced by the French for their refusal to permit the Vietnamese to have political parties and to permit them the freedom to engage in political activity. French policy resulted in the creation of a whole new level of clandestine organizations, political and nationalistic, operating in deep secrecy, holding underground meetings, staging apparently leaderless mass demonstrations, disseminating brilliantly anti-French printed propaganda, and in some cases indulging in assassination and other forms of violence. But the basis for the Vietnamese clandestine organization ran even deeper. It rested on the assumption that a society consists of a host of dangerous and conflicting social forces, which only the enigmatic organization with its secret inness can cope. Power in old Vietnam was something to be fought for, and to seize and clung to exclusively. No emperor ever willingly shared it. A challenger to the throne hid his hand until he was ready to strike. Either in the early days or later under the French, was the loyal opposition permitted to exist. Any opposition was a direct threat, and was relentlessly crushed, wherever exposed. The problem with the clandestine organization, you couldn't really expose it. You weren't sure where it was or what it was doing. Members of an clandestine organization assemble around an individual leader rather than around an ideology or a political platform. The best leader is one who is paternalistic, sly, skilled at intrigue, master of the deceptive move, possessor of untold layers of duplicity, and highly effective in the world in which he moves. Sagacity in the follower consists in knowing whom to join and when, but timing is all important. It's no accident that Vietnamese hold the professional magician in particular awe. The model of the clandestine organization leader, of course, is the man best known to the world as Ho Chi Minh, who for 5 decades played a phantasmagoric role behind his various aliases. Most Vietnamese believe his real or original name is Nguyen Thach Thao, Nguyen being the family. His two most commonly employed appellations were Nguyen Ai Quoc and Ho Chi Minh. They were both chosen for their significance in Chinese ideographs. The first meaning, Nguyen Ai Quoc, meaning Nguyen the Patriot, and the second, Ho Chi Minh, meaning Ho the Enlightened One. Supposedly, when Ho was locked up with the nationalists in China during one period, he had this penchant for lecturing to his jailers, his Chinese jailers. And so they, in a typical Chinese fashion, nicknamed him Ho the Enlightened One. In Chinese, though, this is more correctly translated as Ho the Shedder of Light. And you can see that has a kind of satiric. Here he comes, Ho the Shedder of Light. But Ho, typical, thought that's very good. I like that. I'm going to use it. And he did. Well, anyway, nearly a decade, whoever this man was, he remained in the 1930s largely unaccounted for, or he existed under various names and nom de plumes and pen names and so on. Some maintain that he died in a Hong Kong prison in 1933 under the name of Nguyen Ai Quoc. His obituary was carried in the London Daily Worker, the communist paper in London. Others say that he died in a Hong Kong prison of the Soviet, or in a Soviet prison, not in a Hong Kong prison. And in either case, he was replaced by another person who went on to become the person in the world known as Ho Chi Minh. Another world leader in modern times who was as enigmatic as Ho Chi Minh. But in the best tradition of clandestine organization leader, he never did anything to clear up the mystery. Far from it, he gave journalists and interviewers a whole series of Jean Lacouture, the French writer, interviewed him once and said, I have here 3 official biographies of you I bought in the bookstores here. They vary widely on names, dates, places, and so on. And how do you explain this? And he said, you must allow an old man a little mystery. We had an FBI agent office in Saigon. I was having lunch in the cafeteria once with one of these agents. We got onto this and I said, we don't really know who Ho was still alive in those days. And he said, you have photographs of him? Oh yeah, we got photographs all the way back to 1919. He said, if you can get me good photographs of his ears, like particularly one is a right hand, just an absolute right hand, right angle photograph of an ear that's dated 1919, 1959, 1965. I'll send them back to the lab and they will do a computer study and tell you whether these ears are the same. Ears do not change. Ears are a good method. That's how he caught Al Capone. He had faced, it was Al Capone, right? They shot outside the theater. Dillinger, John Dillinger. He had facial surgery, but he didn't change his ears. Anyway, so we dug these out and we sent them back, and about a month later, the thing came back saying, well, some of these are not exactly right angle. They're a little, the photographs, so it's a little hard for us to make an absolute determination. But based on what you sent us, we would say all of the ears with a 90% reliability were the same. And I, for me, that was good enough. But it still left that doubt. Maybe he did die and his place was taken by someone else. Vietnamese politics today still bear the marks of clandestine organization. It's the arena for the struggle for power. It goes on in the Politburo in Hanoi today. Characterization of this struggle is that the winner, if he does not take all, takes most. And the stakes are high. And the world of organizational infighting is fluid and dynamic, constant flux. Just keep running in order to hold your own. Daily activities involve negotiation and bargaining, sincere or otherwise, partially or complete, in secret, usually through third parties. The world should never know precisely where one stands, nor should the organization be clandestine. But so should its membership. So constantly there are realignments, relations to one's true colors. No position is ever irretrievable. No commitment is ever final. There's always sort of two parts to every clandestine organization. The overt face that was given to the world and the secret apparatus behind it, which is generally the covert leadership. The problem with examining this in political science terms, you knew here was this front organization, clandestine, and you knew that behind that there was someone usually an individual, who was running it. And if you were very clever, this the Vietnamese were doing the same thing, you could get behind that to find out who this person was, only later to discover that that person was put there for you to find, and behind him there was another one and another one, and you didn't know how many there were. It was like peeling an onion. And anyway, by the time you got through all this, then the whole thing was being reorganized and a whole new structure created. It defied Western political analysis. Sometimes an organization is within an organization, such as a front organization, and one of them can evince great hostility for the other, except they're actually both controlled by the third, like 1984. Big Brother ran the system, and he also ran the opposition to the system. Now, most have false patrons. Almost certainly the proclaimed leader is not the wielder of maximum influence. Proselytizing is common, and there's no opprobrium being placed on changing sides, providing you do it in a proper way and with a decent interval. Loyalty may be a virtue, but consistency is not. And all, it's a general fascinating subject. It's hard to say anything about it that you can really depend on or believe. All right, turning now to the third major historical influence in Vietnam, termed here as socio-political malaise. It's not a very good term, but I can't think of a better one. It's a medical term, as you probably know, meaning an illness. Political science sense, it means moral or social decline or disintegration. The usage here, that is the socio-political malaise in Vietnam, is in effect a culmination of the two earlier historical influences, geographic regionalism and the politics of clandestinism. Uh, There's not a great deal to say about this phenomenon other than to acknowledge that it existed. It was definitely a factor, and that to regard the condition that it represented, one of disarray, chaos, anarchy, in the sense of an absence of central government or central order, was very much a real fact of life in Vietnam during the war. I remember one journalist telling me it reminded him of the story of the old New York Herald in the 1920s, when they had a big flood at Johnstown, Pennsylvania, and the only person they had to send to cover the flood was a cub reporter. So they said, "We'll go out there and get us an initial story and telegraph it back. We're going to wait for you here. You've got to be back here by midnight. The message has the story. We'll hold the presses open for you," and so on. They waited about 1 minute to midnight, and in comes this telegram saying, "All is confusion. Can send nothing." That's the way we felt about the Vietnam War. In Hong Kong, when people would go on rest and recuperation, people had been there for the Vietnam for a few years, invariably they would come back with Hong Kong souvenir shops were making all kinds of souvenir stuff for people in Vietnam, including a brass plate, very commonly, that said, "Next week we've got to get organized." And so you'd find people would go there and they'd see this in the store window, they'd go in and buy it, take it back, and they'd put it on their desk and really feel proud of themselves. And I would say, you know, you go all over Vietnam and see that same sign. I've got one on my desk, everybody in the embassy's got one on their desk. You didn't really hit something new. But it did symbolize the sense of the Americans, particularly, that this was a vastly disorganized society. And saying that doesn't really help very much, even to really knowledgeable Vietnamese, and Vietnamese who had educated in the United States. One of my best friends who said, he happened to be in charge of garbage collection in Saigon. I'd known him at MIT, and the garbage was piled up all over town. And so we were having lunch, and I said, "What's with the garbage out there? What is the problem? Don't you have garbage trucks?" "Oh yes, we've got a whole bunch of new garbage trucks sitting down there on the dock, just all ready to go." And I said, "Well," and I read in the paper that you had a riot out at the edge of town the other day by garbage collectors who weren't being paid because they weren't working. And so if you've got the trucks and you've got the workers and God knows you've got the garbage, what is the problem? He said, "Don't you see the problem is putting them together? Somebody has to say, you go there, get this truck, get the gasoline and so on, and you go this route and so on." And he said, "You come from a society which is well organized, and it's impossible for you to understand how a truly disorganized society can be." So it's very much like the business of taking, I take five billiard balls, and I want you to juggle these. And the thing is, keep them all in the air. That's not the problem, keeping them in the air. The problem is, how do you do it? You know, you try to keep five in the air, unless you know how to do it, you can't do it. So it isn't a problem of an intellectual knowledge of what you need, it's a sheer administrative function.
Is there any problem with authority as far as, so the government didn't want to do it or didn't want somebody else telling them what to do?
No, everybody wanted it done. It just, the buttons weren't pushed. It was a much simplistic problem. They licked it, finally. I'm not sure how, but slowly. And maybe, I know, it's hard for us to understand. We come from a reasonably, although I have often gone home and complained to my wife that we're living in a third world country here in Lubbock. I have some particular problem with a dry cleaner or somebody. Well, anyway, social malaise is the third of these four influences, and it's actually where the first two meet the fourth, that is the engine of modernization. All right, next week I'll go on to whatever it is. Quick, somebody tell me what's next week. Recent historical event. Right. Any questions, comments? This is Thursday. Guy said next week. I didn't mean this. Yeah. Well, what did I said next week, I meant next Thursday.
The garbage problem was fixed by some sort of clandestine garbage organization.
Well, people would bribe somebody if they knew they were in the garbage collection business to come and pick it up.
Right.
I was in New York once when they had the same garbage all over the place.